Alrighty, welcome back everyone. If anyone is still out there, to Big Screen Breakdown, that's what the show's called, right? I was just reminded that my last show was New Year's of 2021. So, hello, I'm alive. Got a new job that stops me from, not doesn't stop me, but takes up a lot more of my time than my old job. But I'm back. My name is Mikey. I host the show. And my favorite superhero is Batman, so that's why I had to record a podcast. And I got a buddy of mine that has been on the show before, the Formal Review. Hello, sir.
What's up, Mikey? Good to be back. Honestly, good to hear your voice, if anything, because it's been a while.
Right? Yeah, me and you, we talk on Twitter and Instagram and stuff like that, but we haven't been able to actually chat for a while. But I think the last time we were talking on my podcast was when you, me, and Ryan and Andre, two of our other friends, were talking about that the potential of a live-action Spider-Verse. And now here we are, you know, a couple of years later, and we've seen it. Spoilers. I don't know. How are you?
I've been good. Just pushing through with, like, my podcast, watching a lot of movies, obviously with the pandemic and everything.
So you're living on the East Coast. What's it like? Because we just, out here in California, like, our mask ban? I don't know what you call it. Our mask mandate has kind of been lifted in a lot of areas. And what's it like over there?
At least in Philly, I think they've done like every other place where it's like not mandating it anymore as well.
Okay.
I think it's, for the most part, I mean, I still kind of do it just because that's who I am as a person. But they're not mandating it so much, I think, anywhere except, like, honestly, between when you walk into a restaurant and when you sit down.
And when you sit down, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny because, I mean, as ridiculous as it is, like, you know, everybody's trying to be safe and whatnot, but it is funny to say, like, when a host reminds me, hey, can you put your mask on? And then walks me to my table, and then I take my mask off, and then she asks me a question. I'm like, oh, now I can have my, it's just funny. So obviously we're going to talk about the Batman, but what you say, you've been watching a lot of movies. You've been watching anything good? Any random recommendations that new stuff or some indie stuff or just something that, hey, you know what? I watched this movie again recently and it's a great movie, because this is also a movie podcast, but I normally do some news stuff, but I haven't really looked at the news lately. So
I've been mostly catching up on like the Oscar noms films.
Ah. It is Oscar season.
So been watching films that normally I wouldn't like seek out, which is good, but some of them can be, I guess, a little boring, I'll admit. but I think it's one of the best picture ones. I'll just say that is like Coda. I think that's one of the stronger picks out of those. Mm-hmm. I think that's good. And then just rewatching, I just watched the Turning Red,
which that's the Disney Pixar one, right?
Yeah,
where it's basically the Hulk but adorable.
Pretty much. it's pretty good. I personally don't think it's like at the top of Pixar. It's cute for sure.
I mean, I feel like, I don't know, with Disney animation, and a lot of people don't even know the difference now, that Disney Animation Studios is different from Pixar. The last few Pixar movies have really like not been what they used to be, if that makes any sense what I'm saying there.
Yeah. I feel you on that. I think they're good and they're like well made and stuff. But for the most part they've just been fine, you know, with the Chris Pratt one.
Onward, right?
Yeah, Onward. Like, I loved all of the nerdy aspects to it. Like, it was fantastic from that, and like all like the Dungeons and Dragons references and everything like that. Yeah. So like it was cool from that angle, but then like the rest of it, I mean, it's cool, it's fun, but I wouldn't like, again, put it at the top of Pixar.
And yeah.
I will say Soul was, I think, good. I think that was the most recent good one. Thank
you. Yeah, no, I like Soul a lot. I think the problem, not the problem, but Pixar movies aren't catching like they used to. You know, like when Toy Story and A Bug's Life and Cars and all those and Monsters, Inc., all those like crazy big Pixar movies that like kids were obsessed with, that's becoming Disney animated movies with the Frozen and Moana and the what's the one that just came out that everybody's Encanto.
Encanto, yeah.
Yeah, everybody's just singing the freaking Bruno song all day long. You know, like.
Shh, we don't talk about him.
Oh, yeah, my bad. You're right. Broke the cardinal rule. But it's just, I don't know, it's just looking at what Pixar used to be, it's just they're, I don't know. It's a weird thought in my head. But let's do it. Let's jump into it. Movie's been out for a week, so whatever. Let's just go. I'm not going to do my classic non-spoiler and spoiler. Let's just talk the heck out of this movie because there's a lot to talk about. And if you haven't seen The Batman yet, there's something wrong with you and you should go watch this movie, if anything. Come on back and listen to what we have to say. So, my buddy, the formal review, what did you think of The Batman?
I mean, I loved it. Like, I've seen it now 3 times, so.
Lucky.
Yeah. It's been, like, I think just a lot of fun to go see it in theaters. Mm-hmm. We've talked off screen, like, for me, like, two of them. Like, after the first one I saw it was in Dolby Cinema, which was great. And then, though... It was kind of derailed for a little bit. So I definitely had to see it twice because like almost halfway through it, like the fire alarm went off.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So
I was sued.
Yeah. So like everyone I think was like thinking at the time, like, is this like one of the things that happened like with The Dark Knight, you know, like, oh crap.
You're right.
Like this could be like really bad.
Right.
And then like so we like leaving and whatever, and then as soon as we get outside they say, oh, false alarm, head back in. So then like we had to walk back in and then sit down and then start the movie. So I mean, this is a long movie as it is. Like,
oh, they restarted it?
Not restarted it, but like that took probably 30 minutes or so at least.
Right, okay. Mm-hmm.
So like the movie actually started like at 7:15 and then 7:30 once you get through previews and stuff. So mm-hmm. then like, and so it's about 3 hours to 10. Like we didn't get home until like maybe 11:30 midnight that night because it was just, you go through an hour and a half and you still got arguably 2 hours left.
Right.
And then it's like, oh, okay. Then we're going to pause it for half an hour and then go back in to do the rest of the film.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a little bit distracting. So I had to go see it again after that. But then I saw the next 2 times I saw it in 4DX, which, man, that it's a lot of fun. Like,
yeah,
this was, yeah, anyone out there who has one of those near them, I think this is one of those films that's definitely worth it. It's not a like cool bit, but it's not like over the top, just like a ride every like 5 seconds, but like what some cool bits, like, you know, like in the opening scene, like after the Joker, the Riddler.
Whoa.
yeah, that's it. The Riddler like beats the mayor down and then like he does like a pan up of toward like him and he rips the like duct tape out for the first time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So in the 4DX, it basically, you go up with the camera, small thing and you wouldn't think to care about. And frankly, probably most people don't. But I thought that was such a cool effect that like you can't get anywhere else. And then there's the Batmobile scene, which is just
so good.
A fun ride. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I got a 4DX theater about 45 minutes away from me and I would love to go. It's just like the problem is right now, my new job, I'm working, you know, right now I'm working Monday through Thursday, but I work from 2 p.m. till midnight. So I can't catch like an early show because most of the shows don't start here till like maybe 1 earliest. Mm-hmm. And then like, you know, on my weekends, like I've seen the movie twice now. I went and I saw it last Friday, and then I went and I saw it yesterday. We're recording this on Saturday morning. But I saw it, you know, right here at my local theater. I saw it in IMAX both times. But, you know, like I have something else to do. Like, my, you know, I, you know, I have, you know, family and friends and people that, you know, want to see me. So it's like, right. I wish I could just be like back in the day when I worked a normal 9-to-5 job, which was actually, instead of 9-to-5, it was, you know, 7-to-4, whatever it was. I was able to, like, on a Tuesday night, just, I'm going to go watch the movie again, but I can't do that right now. So I haven't been able to go watch the movie as many times as I've wanted to, but I would love to go watch this in 4DX. The only movie I've seen in 4DX, and we have, that was actually, I think the first Renaissance episode of this podcast, which I guess this is the next Renaissance episode, was when I went to go see Tenet. And I almost feel bummed out because, like, I feel like I was just so confused by that movie that I couldn't enjoy the full 4DX. But 4DX is awesome for people who don't know what we're talking about. 4DX is the way I describe it to people is like when you would go to like Universal Studios and you do like the Shrek 4D thing and the seats move and they shoot stuff at you. It's a real cool way to watch a full movie. You know, it's not like a 20-minute thing at Universal. It's like an actual movie. So
that's the same explanation I give.
It's the only way to tell people, like, oh, well, have you ever been, have you ever gone to Back to the Future, the ride or whatever?
Yeah.
Or have you ever been on Star Tours at Disneyland? Basically, it's that. So yeah, continue. Your thoughts.
I loved everything about it. Honestly, I think like one of the things that, and we talked offline about this, is that when it comes to just Batman, like there was so many moments in this that were just, this is a Batman moment. And like that applies also to the other like side characters as well. But I think like seeing Batman like being portrayed as a relatively speaking comic book accurate character on like the big screen, because we haven't really gotten that in a full movie sense, in especially live action, really at all. So it was really, really, I guess, refreshing in a way to be able to watch a film that was Batman for the entire, essentially Batman for the entire time. And that, I mean, that's a flaw for some people when they're talking about the Bruce Wayne character, but I personally loved every bit about it. I think the way you described the opening scene to me offline, I think that's the one of the perfect examples of it. I'll let you describe it because you did that better than I did. I don't want to take your credit for it.
For me, I mean, again, I love this movie. I watched it again for a second time, and I took my mom to go see it yesterday. And my mom, because I was, you know, I'm raised by a single mom. So as a kid, you know, she shows me Batman, the animated series and the Burton movies and all this other stuff. So she likes to watch this stuff along with me. She tries to, you know, she likes to keep up with the, ask me what like new comic books are out. She'll even watch like all the straight to Blu-ray animated stuff that DC Animation has been doing. So she likes to watch this stuff with me. So it was cool to take her to see that and see her get excited about it. But yeah, for me, that opening, I mean, even the Riddler part, the actual opening was great. Like the first time I saw it, when you're watching, expectations were flipped or whatever, subversion of expectations, because you're watching, you know, you're in a POV shot and you see a little boy and you see his parents, and automatically my thought goes, oh, okay, we're going to watch the Waynes get killed again. It's a Batman movie. It's the very opening scene of a Batman movie. We're just, you know, we're watching Bruce Wayne, and this time they're making his parents get killed on Halloween. Oh, okay, cool. Whatever. The subversion of that expectation, when you start to realize, oh, no. Okay, so this is the new mayor character. And when the Riddler just pops out of the dark, he doesn't even pop out of the dark. He gets lit up. Like, I was like, oh, like that little jump scare in a Batman movie. Like, I was not expecting that at all. I really liked that opening scene. But when it actually comes to the Batman part of the opening, like, it was just like reading a comic book. You read a comic book, and oftentimes comic books have, you know, thought bubbles. They have narration from the main character, and just having these shots of Gotham mixed with, you know, Batman's narration about, you know, how I'm in this second year of this, and the city's crowded and the effect that he's had. And I love the fact that they're showing crime all throughout Gotham, because Gotham is a terrible place. Like, God, this Gotham is so bad. Like every other Gotham seems like, for the most part, like, okay, this is just a city. Sometimes it's a grungy city. But like, this is never a place that I would ever want to live. Like every corner, there's right. somebody getting robbed, somebody throwing a Molotov cocktail through a window. But the fact that they're showing the city and they point out, like, yeah, Batman's not Superman. He can't be everywhere. He can't just fly through the city and stop all these crimes. And but the fact that he's been doing this for these 2 years, and his legend is already building up, and they have the bat signal up in the sky, and the criminals are looking in these dark corners and they're getting freaked out because this is how he shows up. He just shows up out of the shadows. And I love the fact that he wasn't there, but they're running away anyways. And that Matt Reeves, who directed this film beautifully, I feel, just focuses on that shadow and then back to the right. bad guy and then back to the shadow. And you feel fear, like, oh, you're like, oh shoot. I thought like, oh, they're going to show Batman stopping each and every one of these crimes, but no, he's not there. It's just his fear that he's using as a tool. And I love that they use that. Like that was super comic book right. to me.
Yeah, I agree.
And then his actual, like, him, the first time they do show him coming out of the shadows with the, it's funny because it was with the guys that weren't scared of him. You know, the guys that are like, well, who the hell are you supposed to be? Like, they're not scared of him at all in that sense. Except for like the younger kid that they're trying to do the whole gang initiation with. But I loved it. I loved the whole opening was great to me. I think it was the most comic book-y opening to a superhero movie that I've seen. I can't think of something that's been that has felt more like reading a comic.
I don't know. Like, I mean, I agree with everything you said. I think like it just, when it comes to just, you don't know, like in those moments of like which, I guess, bit is, or like which, I guess, villain or antagonist in that like section of just, is he going to go after this guy who just robbed the store? Or is he going to go mm-hmm. after this other, guy who's like the group?
The vandalism
people.
Stuff?
I think like, you don't know which one he's going to. And I think like mm-hmm. that shows really honestly the impact of Batman. And it's just like, I think really shows, I mean, starts off of the film going into that he represents fear in a way,
yeah.
at least at the beginning of this film. And I think like that just, that's something that, I mean, yeah, like obviously a few other films have touched on in a way, but you, like you said, you don't really, I don't know exactly how to explain it, but basically, yeah, I agree. I think it just really establishes the grittiness of Gotham. Which, mm-hmm. like, one thing that, like, I was doing this thing where we were, like, kind of preparing for this film by, like, watching these older films that kind of inspired by this and also, like, Batman, like, Year One, and how, like, really grungy Gotham feels. And this is something that's, like, really, really done well. Like, it mm-hmm. feels gross to be in this area, and that's something that, like, I mean, I would say Batman Begins does put on a little bit. I just don't think like the latter films really do so much, and it's not anything against that because they have their reasons for why that is, but
right.
I think like even Batman Begins doesn't really have that for the entirety of the film. This is a movie that really like carries that from the beginning to the end.
And what I think Batman Begins does is that they keep it in like in that spot in the narrows, and it's like, oh, it's like mm-hmm. Like that's the, you know, for lack of a better word, that's the hood, that's the ghetto, that's like, we keep everything right. over there. The rest of the city is cool, but just that, like, no cops go to the narrows unless, but like this feels like it's Gotham. Gotham in general is just terrible.
Right. Yeah, there's like a, like kind of just basically there's a divide between the good and bad area. Whereas this is just, but in those movies, there's obviously the corrupt and everything, but
right.
mm-hmm. that's it. And this one is like, yeah, they have the corrupt. And then just the city is awful.
Is just awful. Yeah. But the fear thing, I remember, 'cause a lot of people, obviously because people can't just enjoy good movies. People always have to compare movies to movies, and you know, and Batman's not the exception or anything like that. You get it everywhere. Everybody compares. Oh, who's your favorite Spider-Man? Who's, you know, was it as good as Avengers or whatever? But obviously they're going to say, was it as good as Christopher Nolan's Batman movies? Was it as good as The Dark Knight? But in comparing that, they had a very similar opening to The Dark Knight, where we're seeing it's 2 years, about 2 years, like 18 months later, I think they say in The Dark Knight, something like that. And they have a similar opening scene where the bat signal's up there and criminals, I think it pans in like on a drug deal or something. And one guy's like, oh, nah, I think he says like, nah, I'm not feeling it tonight or something like that. But then the other criminal is like, what the hell, dude? Are you superstitious? You got more chance of winning the Powerball than running into him. But in this one, right. Like, no, everybody's actually scared of it. Like, and they're looking in the shadows and they're freaked out about this. So I don't know. I felt like this Batman had more of an impact on the criminal underworld of Gotham than what was shown in another movie. Not to discredit that movie, because people are going to come after me. But I'm just saying, in that aspect, it seemed like this Batman was actually using fear more than the other ones.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that, I mean, not to compare the two too much, because yeah, you're right. I think everyone has their favorite. And honestly, with like talking like any positives really about this film, it's not really to talk down about The Dark Knight, because obviously The Dark Knight has its loving fans. Yeah. I'm going to set this like record straight. I've never thought that movie is as perfect as everyone else does. Having said that,
that's what I love about you, man, because we have I'm not, you know, one of our buddies is if you say a word against The Dark Knight, he will slap you in public and spit on your grave. And you know who I'm talking about. Nothing but love for you, bud. But I love that you and him will always get into it about that movie. Continue.
Yeah, it's and it's not like anything against the movie itself. Like, I do think it's an amazing we made film. Like, there's nothing against Christopher Nolan. I love it from that aspect. And I just have my own personal flaws with it. And I think it, honestly, it takes a lot from Heat, and in many ways that I think, like, how I similarly feel how the Joker takes a lot of plot points from Taxi Driver and a few other Martin Scorsese movies.
Right.
So it's like one of those things that's how I feel about that movie. But having said that, I still think it's amazing. I love watching it all the time. So I think, yeah, I don't want to go into that too much, but it's just like, when you look at it, I agree with you when it comes to just the establishment of fear. Like, there's somebody, the guy who's like, I guess, wanting to buy the drugs from the drug dealer in that moment is he doesn't really believe that it's a big deal. Yeah. Whereas like all of the criminals in the Batman basically just stop what they're doing.
Yeah. The second they see that bat signal, they see some shadows and then they're gone. They're like, oh, no, no, no.
Like the one guy with the drop mask, like he like stops and just like stares. And then he gets hit by a car. Like, he legitimately stops in his tracks.
Yeah. Well, and, I mean, I'm pretty sure he starts to back up. Like, he starts stepping away from the shadows and back into the street and gets hit by a car.
Yeah.
Like so Batman's stopping crime even when he's not stopping crime.
Yeah, exactly.
Sending him to the hospital.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think, like, that aspect, I think, was a little bit stronger in this bit. And it also helps that this film was, I think, a lot darker. Like, we talked about the cinematography already. Like, this film in general, and it goes back to the feeling of this film, it's just darker.
Yeah.
Pretty much the entire movie.
Yeah.
Like, The Dark Knight has bright
rain and.
Yeah. We don't, like, I'm pretty sure, if not like 90%, if not all of it, is at night. And maybe there's a scene like it's at dusk at most. But
and even the day is the funeral scene, but it looks like it's cloudy outside.
Oh, yeah.
It's still not even real sunlight.
Yeah. And then like when he when they first are having breakfast doing like that one cipher, Alfred's doing the cipher, like that last maybe 2 minutes, like it's so infrequently. And like, again, that's like bright and early. So it's like, that's like right when the sun comes up and then that's it.
Mm-hmm. What I do like about that scene though, is that it shows, and we could talk a little bit about this as we talk through the movie, but the portrayal of the Batman slash Bruce Wayne persona, you know, that's one criticism I'm hearing a lot about the movie, is that like, oh, but he wasn't really Bruce Wayne. Like he's not walking into a party with two girls on his arms and like, but paying attention to the movie, this Bruce Wayne is a year two Batman who all he cares about is this, all he wants to do is be Batman. Mm-hmm. He doesn't care about being Bruce Wayne. So, and the fact that he says, you know, he's been doing this 2 years. He says 2 years of nights, I've become this nocturnal animal. You know, he has to, and I really like the contact lenses. You know, Batman always has to have something that's like, there's no way that that's even possible.
Yeah, that was
but dope. The fact they did the contact lenses, I like that as he was walking through the first crime scene of the mayor's house and he's staring at stuff. And I'm like, and in my head, I'm like, is he just trying to remember? But no, he's staring at it so later he can print a picture of it. But anyway, so he's saying, you know, 2 years of nights and this is, I've become this nocturnal animal so much that like when the sun's out, he's got to have sunglasses on inside because he's just like, he's really just like a bat at this point. Like the sun's out and he's like, nope, not having it. But I liked this Bruce Wayne because of where he's at in his story. And I think that he's evolving to the point where at the end, you know, just to jump forward in the Bruce Wayne bit, like he's realizing that he does care about, you know with what happens to Alfred, he does care about Alfred, and that there is more that he can do for the city in the light. And I think that, you know, we'll, you know, obviously I feel like this movie's going to get a sequel. It hasn't been officially announced or anything, but I don't see how it can't get a sequel. So in that, right, then they can play a little bit more into that. But I liked the version of Bruce Wayne that they gave us, because everybody else gives us, every other Batman movie has given us the playboy Bruce Wayne that's, you know, going to parties and you know, bedding chicks and whatnot. But I like this Bruce Wayne. It was different.
Right. Yeah, I agree with you on that. I think just on the eyeglass thing, I really love that bit as well, because obviously, like you said, cool technology is always really dope about like Batman and stuff. And it's like, I think that also ties into like him arguably being this nocturnal animal. Like, if I remember correctly, like we don't see him obviously deal with like sleep and stuff. And so if he does, but similarly, he arguably, if at all, like he sleeps probably obviously during the day, or he doesn't sleep at all. Both are potential believable situations here. So yeah, like with insomnia, like you're not going to remember like night to night, like what is what night. So it's like, I love how it's like recording that so that if he forgets something of which day, he can always go back and look. And that's also why he like does the journal and everything. Yep, I think that's really exactly cool. And so, and going into like the Bruce Wayne bit, I really like this version of Bruce Wayne because I think it's a lot deeper than just a guy who wants to fight for justice. I mean, like that's part of Batman, obviously. But I think like when you deal with, I guess, Bruce, like there's like seeing your, honestly, this film doesn't show it, murder of your family in front of your eyes is a very traumatic experience. 100%. And it's obviously, I've been lucky and that has not happened to me, so I don't know the full extent of it, but I can just assume that it's probably going to put somebody down a very dark road.
Mm-hmm.
And arguably, he doesn't have like this people that raised him. And like we get lines later in the film that like he kind of resents Alfred in a way because he wasn't like, he's not his father. And honestly, Alfred doesn't really know how to raise a child, because that's the version of Alfred that we're getting here versus like the Michael Caine version, who seems more nurturing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so arguably, like when it comes to like teenagers, right, like a lot of people go through the rebellion phase. And it seems obviously in this film that Bruce Wayne never really got out of that. Hence, like the really dark, like Kurt Cobain, like kind of look. And it's like, you look at like him, how he's reacting to everything, and you really think of like, this is a perfect demonstration of like PTSD. And it's like negative coping, basically. It's like, I looked up into this just to see like how accurate it was. And like, negative coping, just kind of just dealing with something, but obviously in a bad way. Like he has the main like symptoms of this is substance abuse, avoidance of others and other things, being always on guard, anger and violent behavior, doing risky things, and overworking. That is precisely what Bruce is doing here. And so it's,
and the
like,
substance is justice.
It's like, and it, exactly. And it's just like, essentially, this is him dealing with the death of his family. And it's like, no one's really telling him no. Like, Alfred doesn't really tell him not to do things. So he's just, this is how he is, the only way that he sees that he can do it, while also somewhat being a positive impact on the city. At least that's how he's viewing it at the beginning of the film, to like obviously take down crime. But it's not like, as we learn, not the best way to go about that. But this is just him blending those two things. And I think, honestly, and this was something that I noticed on the second viewing, was when Alfred like says, I think to him, when Bruce says to Alfred, like, I'm not your father, and like, this is my legacy, this is my family's legacy, and if I don't do anything, I don't, in that first scene where that we see them interact before the breakfast scene, like, I noticed something, I guess, like, more teary-eyed in Robert Pattinson's portrayal, and I thought, I didn't see that the first time around, and I thought that that what really establishes, like, in my opinion, how he is as a character. It's just like, he's ridiculously sad, but he has to basically mask that, and he's scarred. And I think like that, that Batman, or that Bruce, excuse me, really, that's what we're dealing with. So really the Bruce Wayne that we're doing is a traumatic one, that's dealing with it in the best way that we know how. And that's why we see so much of Batman in the film and not so much of the traditional Bruce Wayne, because they're basically one and the same at this point. And so they're battling, going back and forth. And going back to what I was, I know I'm going kind of a little bit of a rant, but one thing that I also noticed, and it was interesting because I was kind of somewhat paying attention to the score of where it was placed in the film on the second viewing as well. And when he's Bruce Wayne at the funeral, like the music gets more toward like with his theme, it's more of the hopeful section, whereas like the rest of the film, it's more darker. And I was like, oh, that's really interesting. Why is that? And that's kind of him obviously being in the light a little bit more, like you said. I mean, he's still kind of Batman, but he's still like getting more connected to the city and stuff. But it's at a funeral, you know, so it's like, this is an interesting place to keep this. And then it's again at the end when it's more in the hopeful scene again. So it's like a weird, it was a very interesting, it was a good choice to do it that way, because it shows like the dark and like how like Batman is like this dark aspect of it, and he's being very vengeful, but then like the Bruce side of the character is this hopeful one, which I think in a way goes back to like his one of the inspirations for Matt Reeves said, like the Ego verse, that series,
Batman where, Ego, the comic book,
exactly. So it's just like a what do you call it, like that comic book goes a lot more darker, but it was just like, it showed a different difference between the two beings and how, what they represent and what side of like a character that they could be. One's really dark and menacing and the other one is more hopeful. And so eventually, which is what we get at the end of the film, they blend together, and that's the eventual one in the sequel, the hopeful Batman that we will eventually get in the sequel, I'm anticipating at least.
I mean, I'm right there with you on that. Like, I don't want to jump straight to the end. We can talk about the end, but I don't want to jump straight there. Let's find something else to talk about really fast. But I had no problems with the Batman that they portrayed. I'm going to say right now, I thought if we're going to compare to the Dark Knight, I prefer this Batman's voice, because I always have hated the Batman voice in the Dark Knight, and I've said that publicly. The only thing I did not like about this Batman, and I will take this to my grave, is I still don't like that cowl. I don't like the mask. I like the suit. I like the suit a lot. I think it's a cool little, like, it looks, it doesn't look like an army suit. It doesn't look, it looks like this dude put the stuff together himself that he made it, but I do not like that mask. It doesn't work for me. But let's,
I think, like, I mean, weird. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
So I'll, only thing I'll say is that with the cow, there were some scenes that I really, really liked it. And then there were scenes where I didn't. It's okay. Really weird. And I think it was like the weird, like, I don't know. I think whenever I saw it from like the front, like if it's like him walking straight or if we're just like seeing him from that, it looks off. But from the side, I don't know why, but like just the way that they filmed it, it looked really dope as a Batman cowl. I don't know what it is about it, but it was just like, it was either one of the two. And
Well, I mean, really they never took me out of the movie. It's just looking at it, I'm just like, I don't like it. What about, okay, so we got obviously a different version of Batman, but we got a very, very different version of the Riddler. What did you think about the way they portrayed the Riddler to be more this and basing it off of the Zodiac Killer, a very real thing that actually happened?
Yeah, I, as a new interpretation, I liked it. I thought it was, it kept like the film kind of grounded in a way. I think I know we're not comparing the Dark Knight a little bit, but I think like what's really great about this is that even though you have a villain, is that arguably with the Dark Knight, that I would say is more of a Joker movie than a Batman movie.
Yeah.
Whereas this one is not, I'm not going to say at all, is a Riddler movie or a Carmine Falcone movie. It's a Batman movie. So I think like it works. And I really like Paul Dano as the Riddler. I think honestly, through the majority of his roles, he's able to play a, when you see his face and just the character, maybe it's just the characters that he's played, but he's able to play kind of a creepy character almost in at least the films that I've seen him in. And so it's like really, I thought that casting was well done. And I liked how they kind of made him in a way, a foil almost to Bruce, in that they honestly, I think they aligned their characters very, very well, similarly in the sense of, and I don't think it's as effective, but I would say it's kind of similar to the duality of like Black Panther versus Killmonger. I think like their duality, just like from where they kind of where they started off, obviously one is more privileged, has a lot of money, the other one is poor, but their end goal, at least in this film, the stories are different in the end result, but they're both like arguably trying to be like trying to get justice. One is just more violent than the other, but they're arguably both taking down criminals. But one of the, and this is another thing that I noticed on the second time, was that the two scenes that we see them beating down their first like victim in the film, basically, the way they attack them is very, very, very similar. And just Batman's obviously just using his fist, whereas the Riddler's using like his, I don't know, the lifter or whatever they call it.
The
blunt object. And I think like Parker, it made sense that, and I think like you kind of even see it, and going back to the cowl point, the nose pieces of the two masks are, I don't know why, but like I couldn't not see it, is that they were so similarly done that, like you said, like with the Batman like outfit, is that this is a costume arguably that somebody could easily just put together. I mean, they showed, oh, you can get these masks at I don't know, like army surplus or whatever. Whatever it was.
Where there's followers.
Yeah. So it's like, I think that they aligned it very well, and they show how his character, obviously, because the Batman influenced him, who was obviously a lot more violent in doing certain ways, which then influenced others. So that shows like how Batman's initial way of attacking criminals in the city doesn't work because he has influences. And obviously that's done in a more verbal confirmation with one of them saying, obviously, I'm vengeance at the end of it. But mm-hmm. I think it works really well. And this was something that may just be me, but I think like going back to the music as well with his theme of like basically the Ave Maria song,
right?
Of like, normally that's a from what I've looked up, it looked like that's like the number one hit for funeral music, but it's like supposedly. But I think like what's interesting about it is that it's not a song, because it's that's more, I guess, it's not a too like melancholy like song in the traditional sense. Like, it's not like dark and sad. It's more right. of the idea of letting go and kind of leaving like the departed basically more on a positive and transcendental kind of view. So it like even represents what Batman needs to do almost with his trauma. Is like, eventually you're going to have to get past this and not forget it, but look at it more and remember the positive sides of what your family is. This may just be me looking too much into it, but I think mm-hmm. that to me at least really shows that what the Riddler in a way would do for Bruce that we would eventually see in the sequel. The only thing that I'll say about the Riddler per se is that, and this goes back into the like the comic book accuracy thing, is that I think he represents more of the Hush character than...
Right, and we got a little nod to Hush in the movie.
Yeah, and I think like the look of him also looks similar to Hush, so, and I think that's the only my issue with the character, is that it's obviously not comic book accurate, but again, that's not a bad thing, because they make it grounded in a way, and I like you talked about, I like the Zodiac aspect to it.
Yeah,
as well.
I think that's where they pulled that from, to where like, hey, if this dude was really around, what's something real world that has been similar? This guy in this comic book, he leaves these puzzles for Batman to solve. Well, that actually happened in San Francisco a couple years back, and you know, this dude killed people and left puzzles for the PD to solve. Oh yeah, so why don't we like make it like that? So I liked that, again, making this movie more grounded and dark and gritty and whatnot, that they took this real world inspiration, and yeah, this is what a Batman villain would have to be, you know, with this Batman that we're getting. Like, he's killing these people, but his kills aren't random, whereas like, you know, as far as we know, because Zodiac was never caught, there was no, it just seemed like he was just going after people that were, you know, making out in public or whatever. But there's a point to this. The Riddler's trying to, in a sense, also unmask the truth about Gotham, and he's so twisted in his mind that he thinks that him and Batman are working together. He was leaving those notes because, hey, we got the same goal here. I couldn't have done this without you. Like, I love that scene because at first you think that the Riddler knows who you are, and maybe he does, and he's just playing it off now. But you know, he's saying the whole Bruce Wayne thing, and then he's looking at Batman like, no, you've been a part of this. I could not have done this without you. I couldn't. I told you, pull him out into the light, and I'll take care of it. Like, and then it was like, oh, okay. this guy is really out of his mind. He thought that Batman and him were working together. He thinks that he's saving Gotham here. So I really like that. I loved all the, to jump really fast. I like the Riddler. I, you know, modern interpretation, but I really liked it. I thought that they took it in a cool direction. I liked the Batman actually got to do some detecting here, even though, he's still very young. So, you know, Alfred's helping him but he figures out the whole Alfred's working on the cipher, but he's like, well, maybe he did give us all the keys, you know, that's his mind that comes up with that. And then they find the word drive, and then he goes, and I love the play on words with the thumb drive. People say this movie isn't funny. This movie had a lot of jokes. It just like, it's not, you know, MCU comedy. It's like, you know, thumb drive, like, oh, that's funny. Or Gordon's reactions to stuff when they, you know, try the thumbprint, and it's like, oh man, this guy's hilarious. Like that real world kind of like, I don't know. A movie made me laugh more than a couple times. But we got to see Batman actually doing some detecting, and I like that he gets it wrong in some points, like the unrecognizable Colin Farrell as the Penguin figuring out that, you know, Spanish doesn't work like that. It's not El Rata, it would be La Rata. And then they're like, oh, and then he figures out, oh, it's a website. This is where I'm supposed to be doing. I'm not looking for one, or it's not to say the rat with wings. It's ratwithwings.com.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that as well, because they kind of like allude to like that happening almost, because like Batman's basically told that earlier on, like with Alfred, he says, like, I don't think his Spanish is the best, but I think that this, it means this. And that's a valid reception, because maybe he's not just a bad, like, he doesn't like say it out loud, like, and says,
URL.
He just says the flying, like, he just says the, and then like, oh, bad Spanish. Okay, fine. You accept that, you move on. Like, that's a simple mistake that honestly, maybe like somebody who's just not intelligent, as we realize, it's a lot more than that. But I think like that was done very well. I will say one of my favorite things to do now. So after the first viewing, we're like, as we're walking out, the credits are playing and Colin Farrell comes up, and my wife goes, Colin Farrell was in this movie?
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, the makeup's really good. And then when I went to see it like the third time with another friend, he didn't recognize it the entire film. And I was just like, okay. And I'm like, all right, so let's wait and watch the credits. And he goes, oh, there's definitely some person that like, you know him. And then he goes, oh, Colin Farrell, who is he? I was like, why don't you guess? And he just starts like spitting, he just like says a few random ones, and then like he's like, I don't know which one. And then like I just do like a waddle, and he just goes like, what? And I like blew his mind on the fact of like that it was the Penguin. And it's just like that, honestly, the makeup on that was absolutely fantastic. Like,
it was so great.
When I obviously, because film Twitter, like, you kind of obviously know it, that it was, I could, when I was watching it, like, I could kind of hear every now and again like a few like Colin Farrell sounding like words coming out but
his Irish coming out a little bit in that Italian accent he was doing.
Yeah, but then at the same time there was like when they actually like interrogate him, like when he reveals like the bad the L versus La moment.
Right.
Like, I weirdly thought that he kind of sounded almost like a Robert De Niro at bits. And it was just like, he was doing a really good job
doing De Niro. The Batmobile chase, which was, there's so many cool, man, with this podcast either going to be really long or we're not going to get to talk about stuff, because that Batmobile chase was amazing. But yeah, the whole, I got you. Like, he sounded, it was De Niro. I was like, okay, you're doing a De Niro. I get it. No, I did the same thing when I took my mom. I was like, hey, who do you think is playing the Penguin? As we're watching it, she was like, oh, I don't know. Is that a new guy? And I was like, no, that is Colin Farrell. She's like, what? And every time Penguin was on screen, like, I could just see her staring at the screen. And I love that when they did that little interrogation at the end, he did a little Penguin waddle because his hands in his, his hands and his legs were tied. He got them.
Yeah, I think like the funny bits in this movie, like you were talking about, I think it's just like this movie's not trying to shy away from like the comic book aspect of it.
Yeah,
like, it's kind of being kind of silly, but it's also realistic. Like you said, like one of the things like with the Marvel films, like I feel like some of their humor is kind of forced. And it bothers me. And this, again, comparing it to The Dark Knight, there's not as many jokes. So, but this one, it's like there's jokes, but they're realistic and they don't like feel abnormal for a comic book movie. Like it's not forced. It's just like there, and it makes sense for the scene. Like he's waddling because his arms are tied.
Yep.
Yeah. So it's like penguin.
Yeah, exactly. It's not a laugh out loud moment. But like you said, like sometimes Marvel movies, like one joke that has always bugged me is in Avengers Endgame when they get all the stones and they're like, who's gonna do it? And Thor's like having this moment where like, no, I need to make up for this. Like I need to do this. This is my fault and I need to fix this. Do you know what's coursing through my veins right now? And War Machine's like, geez whiz, like not the time for a joke. Like this dude is having this crisis of self, and we're making a joke about him being fat right now. Like, but anyways, there weren't laugh out loud moments, but like moments that you're like, that's funny or that's clever or whatever. We can talk about this movie all day, evidently. we got a new Catwoman, which I think she did a great job, but also a new, they've been doing this in the comic books, but Selina Kyle being Carmine Falcone's daughter, is that something that threw you off at all, or were you just like, oh, okay, that's cool? Or
yeah, because I didn't know that it was going too much into the comics, because that makes more sense if that's what they're doing. It goes back into the idea of like it made sense within the story, you know, like obviously Karma Falcone is kind of a shady character, to put it lightly. And so like arguably, it makes sense for him to have raped her mother and had this one kid, you know, and him being kind of just a crappy person.
Yeah.
And so I was fine with that. It didn't bother me as much. I liked it when I kind of eventually realizes that essentially Falcone is basically the cause for Batwoman. I mean, not Batman, Batman, excuse me. Why am I just combining names? Batman and Catwoman, by the transitive property, also the Riddler in a sense. But I think that was really interesting because like he killed her mother and either through a thug on the street, as they allude to, most likely also directly had the hands behind the Wayne's murder as well. Right. So it's like, it really honestly aligns a lot of the three main like characters of this film of like, Riddler, Catwoman, and Batman, like basically against him. And I think like they all represent kind of a side of Gotham in a way, and I thought that was done really well. And obviously I loved Zoe Kravitz in this role. I thought she was great. And there were moments in this film where I watch it and I'm like, wow, you really look like your mom. I grew up like on watching the Cosby Show and stuff, and like I know who Lisa Bonet is and stuff. So I really think as Zoe Kravitz does a really fantastic job as this character. And one thing that I noticed, I think more so on the second time, is the chemistry between her and Bruce or Batman, like the similar like to the animated series of like, there's this relationship, but it's all based on their quote unquote professional aspects. And that, but there's like the thing that obviously pushes them apart is the way that they approach things. Mm-hmm. And I think like that aspect of the two characters was done really well. I really loved actually Catwoman in this film. I thought arguably, I would say one of, if I haven't watched Batman Returns in a while, so I can't really say like how she compares to Pfeiffer as much, but in memory, I would say that this one, again, this is recency bias, but I would say she's better, but I'll give Pfeiffer the benefit of the doubt. So, like, arguably as Catwoman, this is definitely better than Anne Hathaway's version.
100%.
And miles above the Earth's core, that is Halle Berry's version. So, very good portrayal in general.
Okay, let's I want to talk about the third act of the movie, because a lot of people I've seen, like, on Twitter say that, you know, the movie's too long and you don't really need that third act, and it could have just ended when they caught the Riddler. I disagree wholeheartedly. I mean, and that's just not just because I love this movie and I can totally sit through, you know, 3 hours of it. But I think that the third act of this movie is pivotal for this vigilante going from being Vengeance. And I love the fact that Penguin and Catwoman call him Vengeance, because that scene, you know, who the hell are you supposed to be? Like, I feel like he said that probably like 50 times throughout the city. I'm Vengeance. Like, he doesn't call himself Batman. So, you know, Penguin is like, oh, yeah, Vengeance over here. And when he's shooting at him, he's like, hey, Vengeance, I'm trying to take my money. But I think it's what that third act is, where this vigilante goes from being Vengeance to being the Batman, to where he says it in the end monologue, where it's like, no, we have to be more. He's starting to see that he can give the people hope. I thought the moment was so beautiful, where, you know, he takes out Riddler's guys, and then the power cable is threatening the people in the water. So, you know, he does the whole, you know, he cuts it, sacrifices himself, and in a sense where all of Gotham being flooded underwater, but Batman himself is kind of, when he falls in that water, it's like a little baptism moment where he comes out and he's not just the bad guy or the vigilante anymore. Like, he's going to be the hero, and he lights that flare and he saves the people. And the kid that he's seen multiple times in this movie is the first one that trusts him. And then, like, that, the him leading people out following the flare, I thought that scene was so beautifully done to lead to him carrying the girl to the rescue chopper, and she doesn't want to let him go. Like, she only feels safe with him. And it's such a good parallel to the beginning of the movie, where he saves a guy and the guy tells him, don't hurt me. Like, the guy's still scared of him, but now she's trusting only Batman, and he has to kind of give her that nod to be like, no, it's okay, you can trust these guys, they're going to take care of you. And I thought that was so beautiful. I loved every part of that. And I don't know, what do you think the third act was unnecessary? Because a lot of people are.
I didn't think so as much, because I agree with what you said. Like, I think, like, it shows the journey that the Batman character came on and where he would go eventually. And I think, like, that for me really just shows that this is ends up being like Gotham getting to its absolute worst. Mm-hmm. And really showing, honestly, that the Riddler technically won. Like,
yeah.
And really got his goal out. And I think there's, like, an argument out there, like, when it comes to, like, I mean, the Joker technically kind of won too, but I in Dark Knight. But I also think that, like, they change. Like, I don't think that's as, like, obvious in the way, because they.
Well, they cover it up.
Yeah, exactly. They cover it up.
Gordon and Batman know that the Joker won. Yeah.
So I think, like, other than that, like, it's different, because this is precisely, like, the Riddler won. Like, he got everything in the end. Yeah, we're eventually going to get the hopeful side of it, and we get that. But that doesn't mean that at this point Gotham didn't get to its lowest point. We essentially, like, you talked about, like, when he goes into the baptism scene, in a sense, like, as well with the entire, like, washing away, like, it's the same thing for the entire city of Gotham as well. Like, we're basically starting at ground zero again. Like, we're at the bottom here. Really, at this point, the only way to go is up. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, that I really, really enjoyed. I think that, like you said, it's needed to show that, because if we end up with the Riddler being captured, it's like, okay, then really I think there's more of a point that the character didn't go, like the Batman character didn't go through any arc. And by the end, and then in the sequel, I'm just expecting him to be this moody character all over again. Still and then that vengeance. Is a problem. Yeah. And that's a problem. So I think that that's why it works, I think, really well, because it really just shows Gotham changing and starting again. And like, I think with the monologue, yeah, it's not going to be perfect. But nothing when you change it is ever going to be absolutely perfect the first time around. Mm-hmm. The Penguin is still going to eventually be the Penguin that we know as a, well, more so of it as a head of the crime families now.
Yeah, but as the crime boss.
Yeah, so it's not going to be obviously perfect, because just like when it comes to dealing with PTSD and or if you go into rehab or anything like that, or any other mental illness, like as you have a relative cure, whether that be through therapy or medication or whatever, people have relapses, and they, you can take 5 steps forward, but then take 6 steps back. It's always, it's not going to be perfectly. You're going to get improve every single time. There may be some setbacks like the Penguin or any other negatives, but the main thing is that Batman is the thing that's going to be essentially pushing us forward, and what he will represent going into the sequels and everything. And yep. I think that was really strong. It's really strong, honestly, in ending, because it's, again, the ending kind of is tragic in a way of we only can move forward. And I really like that.
But there is that hope. And that's not usually a word that's synonymous with Batman. That's normally Superman's thing. But yeah. Like this Batman, that
or Luke Leia.
Oh yeah, or Leia. but like this Batman is gonna bring this city hope, and he can do that and still, you know, stop crime, but he can be more than what he was. So I loved it. I thought that ending was great. I loved the evolution of the character, seeing it in the movie. I want to put my nerdy hat on really fast. And I know we kind of talked about this offline, but Batman gets shot a bunch, right? Which really made me feel like Matt Reeves watched The Mandalorian and was like, oh, yeah, I can just have somebody get shot, and as long as he's got armor on, he'll be fine. But he takes a shotgun straight to the gut, and it takes him out. And he takes a little something out of his belt that hypes him up. Now, everybody who doesn't read comic books just thinks that he shot himself full of adrenaline. But I think this is a Batman in his second year, and he's either dealt with or knows of a little character named Bane, and he pumped himself full of venom because it took him almost over the edge. But he has that little vial just in case to get him out of that. Just that, oh, I have no other options and I need to get out of this. And what do you think? Was it venom or was it just adrenaline? Don't be
polite. I think venom is a high possibility. I think it's going to be a less of a dose of it, or not as
concentrated. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's just like a little bit just to get him out of a tight spot, because he knows what it does. Like,
yeah, I think like, and this is a kind of, it's canon, but it's technically outside film knowledge. Like the pre-film novel thing. Like they show in that like he goes between universities because he changes majors and stuff like that. And you like learn that he's like, he does like chemistry and stuff like that. So like he puts that together. It's not, I don't think, just adrenaline. Yeah. They don't say that like that it is that, but it lays the groundwork for him being very intelligent of dealing with chemistry and dealing with stuff like that. So if it was just adrenaline, it wouldn't have looked that green.
It was so great.
So, yeah. And so I think that that's something that is obviously an Easter egg for anyone who knows Venom. But I also liked how it kind of made, again, Bruce and Batman more human in a way. Because, like, I mean, we've seen evidence of Batman in, like, past films of kind of being almost indestructible. Aside from, like, you see bruises, but that's really it. But then he kind of just fights through everything. but we don't really see him like really kind of suffering from like his injuries, you know? And I think that this one, when he does like the first Batman fight, like he like limps away and it like looks, makes him look human. And it's like, yeah, the armor that he's wearing probably made the fall a little bit better, but it still hurts a lot that you're going to basically flying that fast and then you kind of hit a bridge and then you roll a little bit. It's going to hurt.
Your organs are still moving around inside.
Yeah, it's still going to hurt significantly. And that, and then him doing this shows that potentially, I mean, he may have been doing that off screen a lot of the time that he was being Vengeance, because he was doing very similar acts of that he was doing in that opening scene of beating the guy. The punching was very similar again. So there's there's a possibility that he could have been doing that this entire time. There's no evidence of that, like, really, because he seemingly was in a little bit more control then, but then he may not have been injecting it straight into his system at that that amount. But then again, in the prior scenes, he wasn't getting shot in the chest 5 seconds beforehand. So, and plus any of the other injuries that he's gotten while fighting. So it's like, I think it's a cool like Easter egg that eventually hopefully will lead to something, but it also works again within the story as well. And I think that's also why I think the nerdy side is what works into knowing, you know, it's more likely than not Venom, but at the same time, it's.
Well, damn. I don't know what happened to the audio, but unfortunately, the conversation got cut short there. I guess the program I was using to record kind of bailed out on me. But I just want to thank my buddy, The Formal Review. If you guys want to follow him, hear more stuff he's got to say, he's got a podcast, he's got a YouTube channel, at The Formal Review everywhere. Thank you guys for listening. I'd love to talk about this movie some more, but just wasn't in the cards today. So, Formal, thanks again for coming on, man. Sorry our conversation got cut short. I don't know what happened, but as I'm editing it now, this is what happened. So it's kind of where we're stuck. But thanks again, man. If you guys want to hear me talk some more about movies or read what I got to say, you can follow me on Twitter at BigScreenPod. Or my personal _MikeyRocks on Twitter. And thank you guys again for listening.